Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
You are listening to Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a podcast about Linux, open source, and amateur radio for everyone. Now here are your hosts, Cheryl, W5MOO, and Bill, NE4RD.
Hello and welcome back, everyone. You're joining us for episode 623 of Linux in the Ham Shack, the most terrific amateur radio podcast on the internet. This week, we're sharing some news about what's been going on in our lives, as well as a featured topic from one of our listeners' feedback. But before we get into that, we should introduce ourselves. Our silent key, Russ, K5TUX. I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD. And yes, good evening, everyone. Thanks for listening to us as we, well, at least as I prepare to be gone for a couple weeks. got National Jamboree time banging on my door here. I'm about 1 week out from being on the ground there. So, it's a busy time for me right now, putting everything together and getting stuff ready. But let's find out what Cheryl did this week before we get into our topic.
Yeah, well, Cheryl has, she's been checking out some new foodie type stuff, continuing on with my reliving barbecue type foods from my youth. I have a pork steak marinating in my fridge and my mother's, you know, quote unquote, signature teriyaki sauce. And with that, I'll have some corn on the cob after we're done with the podcast. Regarding the computer stuff, nothing major, bills, probate, usual thing. Radios are offline till Bill comes back to visit. And otherwise, last night I attended a minor league version of the Savannah Bananas, which is the thing I attended last night was called Boomball. It was kind of a day-long event, 12 hours from the time I left the house till I pulled back in the driveway. Temperatures were really good in the 80s, great breeze, but it wasn't real baseball. They have a weird set of rules, supposedly to make it fun. I found it boring, and so I'm kind of happy that Russ and I didn't actually make it to the Savannah Banana Games, which is the same concept that we were supposed to attend last year, because I think Russ would have been super disappointed in this. But other than that, today I had a funeral to attend in Tulsa, which is 160 miles away in each direction. In theory, I should have been home by about 5:30 or 6 o'clock. I came screeching in the driveway at, 7:15 when I texted Bill and said I'm home. So I kind of came screeching in the driveway on two wheels and slid into my desk right on time. So, and that has been my week.
Yeah, sounds very, very busy. Well, I've been, been working on the diesel truck. We did finally take away all of the parts that needed to go away, and then we put back the parts that needed to go back. But sadly, the programming has not been successful yet. We still have an error code that has not gone away on the truck. So I made the command decision today that I'll be switching vehicles and using a different vehicle for my transport, and most likely be hauling a trailer to National Jamboree. So I'm working on that for tomorrow's busy stuff to do, I'll be going around and either purchasing a trailer, borrowing a trailer, or renting a trailer. So one or the other, one of those three things I'll do, and I will be making my way to Beckley area, West Virginia, to the Summit Bechtel Reserve here, probably on the Wednesday, Thursday time frame, leaving the house here. What else? Anything else? Computer stuff? Man, yeah, I've been installing Linux like a madman today on all of the Jamboree laptops. All five of the K2BSAs are done, and I have an extra one that I have not yet given to the K2BSA, but is now configured to be a spare for that project. I installed Kubuntu 26.04 LTS on all of them and updated them and installed Andy's Ham Radio Linux. Hey. So it has all the apps on it. I figure I'll just I'll use his easy mode button, even though there's a few, you know, things that have upgraded since then. I'm not going to be too concerned about it because we're primarily going to be using Wavelog for our logging And I've already installed Wavelog Gate on all the computers. I've named them all. I've got API keys for all of them so that they can connect into the logging software with connected to the ICOM 7200 Mark IIs. I have not yet tested it actually with the radio. I'm just making the assumption it's going to work right now because I'm just trying to finish up the other little, so I have like some mini computers as well that drive the demo screens up front for sort of our interactive discussion before we send them off to talk on the radios at the individual stations that we have. So I have like three big monitors up front with little mini computers that have various applications running, whether that be an SDR app with our own little SDR that we have there with a Magloop, or you know, it's not the Magloop version, it's the electric loop or something like that, a powered receiving loop. And I have the AirSpy HF Discovery Plus that we plug into that. So I normally have something up there to show Spectrum, or I might show Phil's K9 AQ's SDR thing. So I'm trying to decide what I'm going to do specifically for that yet, but it gives me lots of options because I have everything to do it as well. I'll probably show off Oscar Watch there as well, because you know, satellites are kind of cool to talk about, and we may or may not be able to talk to satellites while we're there. We definitely have the radios. I'm going to bring I have a dual band antenna that we can use. It's not technically a satellite antenna, but you know, on these LEOs, you don't really need much of a antenna as long as it's semi-directional, which this is just like a little handheld beam. And I'm just going to YOLO everything here, I think. We have a master plan that most of that stuff comes off without a problem. It's some of these little tiny detail things that are just,
whatever.
Kind of just making it work as we go along and kind of what people are interested in, because a lot of times we'll switch what screen is up there as we're talking to somebody, whether that be a scout, a scouter, a parent, or a visitor or whatnot. You know, we might show them various things as we talk about, you know, amateur radio. Like we might show them the ARRL website, or we might show them KB6N news page to get a study guide. We might do many different things at the front counter there. So it's nice to have a nice big display and a browser and a capability to run just about everything, including showing our live logging, which will be, you know, again, in Wavelog. But anyway, that's what I've been working on, and hopefully I'll be done at some point in the near future here. Let's get away from that, because that is, it's just consuming our time right now. We have a wonderful feature topic that we kind of took in as a listener feedback, and I had a back and forth with this person here, Jonathan Rhodes, KD2HBV. He sent us a note and he's like, I'm trying to figure out how to tune a homebrew dipole antenna using the SWR readout on my QRP rig. And he says it's a ZBitX. Thought if I'm interested in this, perhaps others are, and maybe it would fit into your short topic list. And it's definitely something I kind of started thinking about it yesterday. And like, this is a really good topic, and it's something that we generally don't cover because we think it's, you know, assumed or, you know, you should already know how to do this kind of thing. But I know before I had a fancy analyzer and everything else, yeah, I had the same technique that you should have of being able to tune your antenna with just basically your rig. So this is the topic we're going to cover tonight, and hopefully you enjoy it and learn something from it, maybe, or maybe you can tell me I'm wrong on stuff and correct the error in our ways. But we're going to kind of break this down into the pieces that we were given by Jonathan, and then we'll come up with the solution at the end. So we'll start first with the antenna side of things. So what is a dipole? And Cheryl, why don't you give us what a dipole is?
Okay, so a dipole is simply a wire antenna fed at its center with two equal length halves extending in opposite directions. It's a balanced antenna, symmetrical around the feed point. To be resonant, it needs to be a half wavelength long at its operating frequency. And the formula for that would be length or feet equals 468 divided by the frequency or the megahertz. That gives you sizes ranging from about 16 feet on 10 meters all the way up to about 260 feet on 160 meters. Resonance matters because it puts the antenna's impedance in a range compatible with common coax feed lines. But resonance isn't strictly required. An antenna tuner can compensate for dipoles that are longer or shorter.
Yeah. So the antenna is a very simple. I think everybody has at least tried to do a dipole antenna at one point in time in their career in ham radio, or have used a dipole. And maybe you didn't even know you used a dipole. But the length is the critical piece on a dipole and it being resonant. And we're talking about measuring the resonance with an SWR. So what is the SWR, Cheryl?
So the SWR is short for standing wave radio. Ratio. And that's what, pardon?
Ratio.
Or sorry, ratio. So I was reading ahead of myself there. So when RF power travels down a feed line towards an antenna, some of it gets radiated. But if the antenna's impedance doesn't match the feed line's impedance, some power bounces back towards the transmitter. That reflected wave, and the forward wave interact, creating a pattern of higher and low voltage current points along the feed line is called standing waves. SWR is simply the ratio of the peak voltage to the minimum voltage of that standing wave pattern. Perfect match is 1-to-1 SWR with no reflected power. Higher ratios mean more mismatch and more reflected power.
So the perfect match is 1-to-1. So if we were grading the SWR in a scale of A to F, you know, this would be the A plus. Somewhere, anywhere below 2-to-1 is generally considered, you know, B plus to A material. And then after that, it goes down really fast. You can still operate antennas mostly, you can operate antennas to where it's breaking your rig. You do not want to do this. But we're going to use this measurement on this particular rig to figure out where our antenna is. And so we'll just talk briefly about the rig. So Cheryl, can you tell us a little bit about that Z-Bit X that he's using?
Sure. So I went and looked up what a Z-Bit X is, and it is a highly compact, all-mode, all-band, software-defined radio, otherwise known as SDR, transceiver designed for portable and QRP amateur radio. It's very compact in size. It measures 5.5 by 3 by 1.25 inches and weighs 250 grams, 9 ounces. Yeah. It covers 80 meter to 10. It runs digital modes like FT8 natively. It's built by HF Signals and is powered by a Raspberry Pi Zero. So yay, Raspberry Pi. Running open source SBITX software that allows for future software upgrades. The key features of it include CW, FT8, SSB, AM, FreeDV, and SSTV. Integrated FT8 functions as a complete FT8 station directly out of the box without needing a PC interface. It has a built-in EF-HW transformer. So it has an in-fed half-wave transformer allowing you to connect a long wire antenna right up to the radio. Delivers 5 to 10 watts of output power depending on the power supply and is powered by two 18650 LiPo batteries. And it features a 480 by 320 touchscreen and a VFO dial. And it has a built-in N1MM style logger and an on-screen keyboard.
Yeah, and David's pointing out in the chat room too that there's the version 2 has a few extra bells and whistles, and there's several models that sound like this. They have the Z-BitX, the S-BitX, as many others. But this particular one, I think, is the version 1 that he was mentioning to us. So that's the one that I looked up the manual on just to see exactly what it provided, because some of these rigs provide an SWR sweeping function, so you kind of get a full readout of what the SWR looks like across the band. So in this case, he doesn't have that. He has just the SWR off the rig, and it could be wrong plus or minus, but essentially we have to assume that the rig itself is happy when it says 1-to-1 at its own measurement. In any case, here's how you would actually go about doing it. So especially you want to use something CW mode in order to do this, because we need to test various frequencies along the band that you're trying. So let's assume that we're using 40 meters. And because, I don't want to mess up the 40-meter band plan, let me pull up the band plan. So amateur radio band plan, because I do know it, but in the heat of the moment, I'm going to forget it. So what you want to do is to be able to look at your band. So we're going to look at 40 meters here, and we're assuming we have a 40-meter dipole. Now, within the limits of your particular license class, you can transmit a very low power signal. Turn your radio all the way down to its lowest power setting, and you will measure the SWR at various places along the band. So you'll start at the bottom of the band, and depending upon where you want it centered at, so if you're playing just in CW, you kind of want the lowest SWR measurements to be within the range of 7 megahertz up to 7125 megahertz, 7.125 megahertz. So you would, if you're tuning for just the CW portion of the band, you could just go ahead and create a signal, write down a number, and I suggest using a spreadsheet for this, because then you can just make a nice little chart for yourself. You can make that pretty little graph. Go up to 10, 15, 20 KC, do the same thing, get a measurement, see if there's a dip in there. If there's no dip, then you need to go out further. So you go up into the voice portion and see where it starts going down. Essentially, you'll get either a slope, so a line going down a certain direction, or going up a certain direction. And if you chart the entire band, which might be excessive because you got to go all the way up to 7.3 megahertz, but you never know where your actual antenna is clipped at. You need to figure out where it's going to the lowest point. And if it's off, you need to see if it's off below the band, so on a lower frequency, or if it's off on the higher frequency. So if it looks like it's getting more resonant above 7.3 megahertz, we need to bring the band down. We need to bring that resonance down. So in order to make the resonance lower in frequency, we need to add length to the antenna. So always remember that when you're going lower in frequency, you need to add length. So low equals length, add length. If you need to go higher, you remove length. So if you're seeing that slope or the dip above the band or below the band, you either have to add wire or remove wire. But essentially, with the radio, with just the SWR measurement, and using low power settings, and CW is a great little way to do it, is to go ahead and chart it yourself. So you're basically creating that graph that a analyzer or a VNA or something like that would do for you, but you can't do that with that particular rig. Let me take a breath. Does that make sense to you, Cheryl? Because that would be my litmus test. That I'm trying to explain this pretty simply. So essentially, you want to chart SWR across the band. And, you know, obviously, you can only be in your permissible transmitting area. So if you're general, you need to skip the portion between 7.125 and 7.175. Same thing on any of the bands. Get out the band plan if you're not familiar with the band plan on your particular band, on your particular frequency. Check out the band plan. Ensure you're within your license privileges. And then you can create a chart for that particular antenna. Now, there are many ways that you can have... sorry. Brain fart there. I was going to mention an easy way to have clip-on wire that you can add to your antenna and do testing using power poles. I like using power poles when I do portable operations to add, have like predetermined length to add my antenna length. I can click into the other one to make it longer or shorter to change the bands. But when you're doing incremental changes and stuff like that, not only does the length have an impact on that SWR, but also where the antenna is mounted and what it is next to. So things with the antenna will interact with environmental things around it. I know I said things way too many times there, but
but it makes sense. So
yeah, so if your feed point or your antenna is next to, you know, a metal building, or even a tree, it's going to have an impact on the SWR and the performance of the antenna. And we'll just forget I even said performance because that doesn't really matter in this particular case. We're just trying to get that SWR down. But raising the same antenna or to a different location, it will behave differently in everywhere you put it. So there will always be like slight changes based upon the environment. And even just bringing up the feed point, you know, where the actual coax splits out to the dipole antenna, bringing that up higher or lower will have changes as well. So your actual height above ground will have effects as well. So not only just changing the length of wire is important, but also being able to move the antenna. So if this is a portable antenna, you know, it's going to see a lot of different environments. It's going to be thrown over trees. It's going to be, you know, perhaps on a fishing, one of those fishing pole extension things, or perhaps an extendable mast. There'll be a very, very many different ways that this antenna will be handled. You know, it might even be in different orientation. It might not be a flat dipole. It might be an inverted V. It might be set up in a sloping form, which has all the same kind of impacts on the standing wave ratio for the antenna. So, but once you have it mounted and, you know, using all of the effects that are in play, so your environmental effects are going to be static at that point. You know, that's when you're going to change the length of the antenna. But don't expect it, if you take it down and move it, to be perfect in the next location that you mount it to, because it will change based upon environmental factors. So let me read the note here from David, because he always has good input here. If you have a sufficiently broad banded dipole, for instance, there's no loading, only wire, then you can make your point of resonance outside of your band privileges for the purpose of having more of the overall band available to you. Okay, loading the dipole narrows the SWR bandwidth sometimes drastically. Greater wire diameter can add SWR bandwidth to the same length antenna. Yes, yes. So sometimes on shorter dipoles, which means higher frequency, you tend to go with larger diameter wire. So I have a couple of dipoles that I built for 6 meters. And those are actually made of pipe because it tends to be easier to have more broadbandedness out of the antenna if it's tubular. And you can notice this with beams, right? Because your beam essentially has a dipole, essentially in most cases has a dipole in it as the driven element. And all of the other elements are, you know, the directors and the reflector element, reflecting elements. So they're non-energized. It's only the driven element that is the one receiving the power. But you'll notice on most of those antennas, you know, it's not like a little piece of THHN or something like that, you know, like a house wire or something like that. Normally it's tubular. So that can affect it. Tape, yeah, like he's saying in the chat room here, yeah, electric fence tape can also make a good lightweight antenna. You know, copper braided tape, even foil tape and stuff like that can end up being more broad banded. But essentially, that's just optimizing for your dipole, right? For this particular case, we're just looking at ways to affect the SWR using the measurement device that we have. So I think we've sufficiently covered that particular case. Do you think we answered it, Cheryl?
Yeah, I think so. You pretty well covered everything. So
yeah, I think we're getting into the weeds with antenna theory and development. You know, oh, we should just use an EnFET half wave and then YOLO it into a tuner, and then we don't have to worry about it. And if we had a tuner, we don't have to care about the length because like the tuner will eat it up and everything else.
Right.
So
I guess in the end, did we completely answer Jonathan's?
I think so. So
question.
Let's just summarize it one more time, even though I already did it once. Make a chart using CW, low power, across the band that you're measuring. Find either where it dips or if it's sloping in a certain direction. If it's if the antenna is resonating too high, you're going to add length. If it's resonating too low, you need to cut length out of the antenna. So you need to make it shorter. So that's the essential thing, is creating your own little chart based upon your little rig and your actual where the antenna is installed. But taking note that if you move the antenna, though, it won't be the same. It absolutely will not be the same. So that is that. And I thank you, Jonathan Rhodes, KD2HBV, for that topic. That is really relevant to what we all do. And, you know, even if we have the fancy analyzer, some people don't know how to even read the analyzer and what it means. They just, oh, you know, look, it looks like it's in the band. It's some of the tools make it really nice and easy for it. But I think understanding the basics of getting your antenna tuned using just your rig, especially because if you're out in the field, you probably, you know, oh, man, I forgot my analyzer at home. You know, I went all the way up to this mountaintop and I'm deploying this dipole, and I didn't feel like carrying my, 20 ounce, analyzer with a 10 inch screen. So I could tune my antenna up here.
Right.
But you could make a chart even with pencil. You don't need an Excel sheet or something like that, like I said earlier, but you could even just do it with pencil and kind of just make your little dots across the piece of paper. And, you will essentially see the same kind of, visualization or graph that you would see in a modern VNA. So thank you again for that topic. And
yes,
I think it's now
so
time to move on to announcements and feedback.
Woo-hoo. Okay, so it's nothing's really changed. There's one addition this week, but to start the list, we need help supporting the show. You can do that via Patreon, PayPal, merch, sharing the podcast via social media, rating us in your podcast application. We always need show topics and feedback and questions and any of that nature stuff. And, you know, Jonathan is a perfect example. We're going to be taking a break from recording for a few weeks due to Bill doing the whole Boy Scout Jamboree thing. We will be skipping recording for at least the next 2 weeks, which will be July 19th and July 26th. Bill did say if he's not terribly busy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, we might do something while he's at Jamboree, but there's no guarantee on that. August 2nd. Probably depends on how tired Bill is, because I know he's going to get home like on the 1st. I think that's right. So August 2nd may be iffy as well. But again, we're still alive. We're still out here. So don't panic about that. Now, in conjunction with that, Bill always needs people to interact with the kids through the K2BSA. They're going to be operating on HF 40 through 10, E-Star and REF 0-3-3A, Echo Link on JODA 36-365, in more places as time, conditions, staffing is allowed. So if you hear them on the air, take a minute to chat with the lucky camper you're talking to. And Bill has posted a great list of questions to ask those campers on the K2BSA website. So definitely pop over there and check it out just so you're, you know, prepared. So, and for the last thing, we're going to have a memorial service for Russ, K5TUX, at our home in Missouri on November 1st. Everyone listening is welcome to attend. So if you'd like to join us, you want more information, send us an email. We'll fire off some more info to you. Or there is a Facebook event page. The link to that will be in the show notes. And as always, you can send us any sort of information to info@lhspodcast.info. So.
Yes. Sorry. I was got distracted, of course. And let's see, we do have an additional piece of feedback that came in here from Ray Franz, WB0SMZ. And I'm just reading this live because I have not even read this yet. I just listened to a podcast of yours from a few years ago, podcast number 537 for the Qlog ham radio software. Logging software. I have it installed on my Linux Mint and enjoy the software a lot, but I have noticed an issue with my installation. The time shown for the QSO is incorrect and I cannot find the solution. I have a digital clock in my UTC on my desktop so I can reference UTC time at any time. What I found is this example. Linux local time is in the lower right-hand corner and it's 0534. UTC time on my digital clock is 0034. But Qlog time for the current QSO is 12:35 a.m. Would you have any ideas that I could get Qlog to log its QSOs and UTC time? Would those programs like Genlog, DXLog, and others default to UTC? Otherwise, I love Qlog for general purpose logging. I installed it from the software app on Linux Mint, which is probably from the Flatpak store. Well, yeah, 0034 is 0034. Well, is essentially the same thing as 12:35 a.m., plus or minus a few seconds, because that's within 1 minute. So I think what the deal is he has it in a.m. and p.m. mode and perhaps getting a little confused on the conversion between those two values. So if I were to say Qlog is in 24-hour time, that actual QSO was logged at 0035 instead of 12:35 a.m. So I think everything is working as intended. I think probably it's just the display that is slightly odd. Qlog definitely records and saves in UTC. And from what I'm looking at, from what you have explained, Ray, they are exactly the same. Yeah, they're a minute off from each other.
Right. Yeah. There's some setting, where you can change it from military time to,
Yeah. 12-hour clock to 24-hour clock.
24-hour clock. Yeah.
Maybe that would take away the questioning of the time. And I believe Qlog does the time when the QSO ends too, or something like that. So it does something weird too with that, but essentially 0034 and 0035 are within the window of an acceptable QSO on Logbook of the World. Otherwise, you would see none of your LOTW contacts and stuff like that syncing and validating or club log or any of the other ones. So I'm assuming that you haven't seen this, which means everything is working exactly as expected. I would just switch your time so it shows it in 24-hour time. And move on, because I think everything is working fine with Qlog, and I'm glad you're enjoying it. I enjoyed it while I was using it, and if I were back to using a logger locally, I'd probably still be using Qlog. Qlog. David's saying I think Qlog can be user selectable to time on or time off both ADIF fields. Yeah, and he might only have one showing as probably perhaps a time off field, which would be a little bit later. I don't know. Likely, yeah. It's essentially the same time. Don't worry. It's doing exactly what it should do. I would change it to 24-hour time so you at least can have parity against your UTC time clock, which is obviously in 24-hour time. With that, let's move on to subscribers and supporters. Cheryl?
Okay, so this week, no paid Patreons, no free Patreons. No PayPal on Facebook. We had Jeff Weisong On Instagram, there was no one. X/Twitter, no one. Mastodon was Kentucky alumni at mastodon.world. Discord wasn't any, there was nobody there. Live show participants, we had Mike, K6GTE, David, W4DPE, Don, KB2YSI, and Ken, WA7YW, or excuse me, WY. Wow, I'm dyslexic.
It's a lot of W's.
There's a lot of W's there, yeah. So.
Well, not. I'm just going back up to the chat room just to see if there was anything else added. I see Don made it in this week, so that's great. And yeah, I think that's all the comments we had. So, thanks again to the feedback from Jonathan Rhodes, KD2HBV, for the topic tonight. I hope I didn't muddle it up too much or make it sound even more confusing than what it was. Thank you very much for sending that to us. So Cheryl, why don't you get us on out of here?
All right. So that brings us down to the end of our show. Thank you everyone for listening to episode 623. We'll catch you next time with our featured topic episode, which I'm going to force Bill into telling us all about Boy Scout Jamboree. For us, K5TUX, I'm Cheryl, W5MOO. And
I'm Bill, NE4RD73.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a community-sponsored podcast. Live recordings are Sunday nights at 8 o'clock Central Time. Our homepage can be found at lhspodcast.info. You can support the podcast via Patreon at patreon.com/LHS podcast. We're also on Discord, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Mastodon. Contact us via email at info@lhspodcast.info or via voicemail at 1909-547-7469. That's 1909-LHS-SHOW. We also have merch. So until next we meet, remember to always heed your hedonism.